Welcome to Mighty Parenting, the podcast with real, raw, and relevant talk about raising teens and parenting young adults. Here are your hosts, Judy Davis and Sandy Fowler.
Welcome to Mighty Parenting, the community where we help you raise your teens and parent your 20-somethings so they can become happy, successful, and emotionally healthy adults. And hopefully you'll be a happy, successful, emotionally healthy parent along the way. I'm Sandy Fowler. I'm here with my co-host, Judy Davis. And today we are talking about teen dating. And I have been chomping at the bit to actually get into this topic because honestly, I don't understand what is going on out there with today's teens and 20-somethings in the dating scene. So I'd like to get a better picture of that. And I know that it makes my girls crazy because they feel pressured in different ways when all they want is to have some time to get to know somebody and to find out if they click. But there's this pressure to, like, or at least they feel a pressure to go full speed ahead. Like, you got to dive in, be exclusive. You know, they start dating somebody and it's like they're married off already. And that is not their thing, thankfully, because that would make me crazy. But I also find that I find it difficult to guide them and to help them when I don't know what's actually going on out there. Judy, are you running into the same, you know, have you run into the same kind of thing?
I do. You know, it's, this topic is so frustrating to me because I think that things are so different from when we were dating. I mean, back in the day when we were teens and 20-somethings, we went out with multiple people. We went out in groups. We didn't get exclusive and go one-on-one or car dating till much later. So the result is that I built a foundation of what I wanted, what I didn't want, and it was easy for me to kind of get into dating without all the pressure you're talking about, Sandy. So when I read an article and the expert tips on teen dating, I knew that I had to have Mary Jo Rapini on our show. She is a psychotherapist specializing in intimacy, sex, and relationships. She lives in Houston, Texas, and we all know that I have a passion for Houston. My kids are there. Yeah, that's kind of fun. She is a keynote speaker across the nation and speaks to kids and girls and delivers that message on helping girls become strong women. And she is joining us today just hot off of her bi-weekly segment on Fox. And she talks about relationships in Ask Mary Jo. She has been on CNN's Prime News, CBS Up to the Minute, Fox National Morning News, Montel. The list and list goes on because she is the expert on teen dating. So welcome to our show, Mary Jo.
Thank you so much. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah, us too, us too. Well, I know Sandy and I kind of shared our thoughts on it, and primary question that we had when we talk about dating, what is the current norm? What does it look like?
I think the current norm, and it depends where you live and what school you're at, which I think a lot of parents aren't, you know, if your child says everybody's doing it at our school, they may be absolutely honest. Everybody at their school is doing it this way, but that's not what we're seeing across the board. I mean, some schools are really good at fostering groups. They don't want kids to get off one-on-one and have boyfriend, girlfriend. Other schools are not as successful with that. But I think overall, you know, I work with intimacy and sex as well as teen relationships. And we're seeing that teens are taking less risks sexually. And they're actually not, there's not as many teen pregnancies. That rate is going down for the most part. And it has for the last 2 years, which means parents must be educating their children more, or the schools are doing a better job of educating. But it's still scary because kids are texting more. There's more pornography. anything with social media. Snapchat is getting kids in trouble. Tumblr. And I think it's more the social media part that scares me as a parent and as a therapist about what happens to teen dating.
Can you talk about that? Like, dig into that a little bit? You know, what is it about social media that is alarming to you?
Well, what's alarming to me is how fast the girls are growing up, and especially the girls, and how provocative they are. And, you know, boys have not changed that much, but girls seem to have gotten more aggressive. And I see it very early in girls now. They're trying to make a mark. They're trying to have somebody secure. And, you know, teens with relationships are never secure. You can have somebody dating your daughter for 2 weeks and then it's completely over. It's flipped. Her best friend, you know, may have sabotaged the relationship. So we're seeing a lot of problems when teens do date, where their friends align, because your mark of how you'll do going through school, how successful, how emotionally well you'll do going through school is not how many boyfriends you have or how many girlfriends you have. It's how many friends you have, peer relationships. And so in Houston, in the area that I am specifically in, we're talking about the value of relationships and exploring the friendship, staying away from sex, putting that on hold, because relationships that are based on sex are never as successful in teen years or adult years as the ones based on relationships and friendship.
So, Mary Jo, you said that girls have become more aggressive. Do you mean...
It appears that.
In what way are they being more aggressive? In getting that relationship or in their sexual activity or what?
Well, in their sexual activity, and they're using it as a way of getting relationships. You know, my biggest shock is like when I see 7, 8, 9-year-olds teaching how to make up on a YouTube channel, and they have over 1 million subscribers. I think that's substantial. I think that's saying something about what's going on with these kids' heads, like what the power of beauty, the power of their looks, that they're finding out makeup changes how they appear to the world, and especially to classmates and the opposite sex in particular. They're getting asked more. Boys have always wanted to see girls' naked parts, but girls are more likely now to send them via a Snapchat or something, a photo of themselves. In other words, there seems to be less respect for keeping that part exclusive or sacred, if you will.
Is that a belief system that they have to send those pictures and do those things in order to have the acceptance and approval?
I think we don't understand in the schools how important and how desperate most kids feel is in regards to whether they're liked, whether they're accepted, whether they have friends. I think you can even take the more popular kids and they are still scared about it. They're anxious about it. How they appear means everything, and they don't understand that when they do anything on camera, that's going to be a constant reminder to them. So I'm working with parents exclusively to try and get parents to not overexpose their kids to phones that will do everything. Because I don't think, you know, when most adults hit an age where they realize everything they ever said or every photo they ever had is available since social media came along and really since iPhones have come along. Mm-hmm. And before that wasn't true. I mean, you could take a picture of yourself and it might never be seen again, but that is not true anymore. Mm-hmm. And when kids make a lot of mistakes, their frontal cortex is not developed yet. In fact, it's not developed until the age of 23, 24. And for most kids, that's the frontal cortex helps you understand time. It helps you understand planning. It has organizational skills. It has skills that help you evaluate and see potential risk factors or consequences. If you think about someone going out and living a life and having access to social media and these iPhones with incredible power, not being able to understand consequences of what they're doing, that's a scary thought. But we do it every day. We send our teens to school with iPhones.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it seems like that coming into relationships and dating with desperation being that driving force, it would impact the emotional growth and development about creating relationships that are healthy for their age, and that impacts when they are getting into their 20s and finding their spouse.
That's right. Well, parents still play a very important role in this. And we, you know, when you look at the research, parents are in the 90th percentile as the biggest influencers. But parents are busy now. And they, when their children are teens, there is a real effort for parents to want their child to like them. And to, so the kid acts like they want to be with their friends all day. But that doesn't mean the child doesn't want mom and dad around. That just means they want to spend time with their friends. But the person, they still allow the largest percentage to influence them in a healthy family is their mom. Usually for girls, it's their mom. Mm-hmm. And I think for some boys, that's true too. And so if you think about that and you're busy all day and you're tired and your child's going to go home to Jessica's house, it's going to be so easy for her when she comes home, say, how was your day? Oh, it was great. Okay, let's go to bed. And that's it. And that's what kids are getting. So they're not getting the values. And if they do get the values and the other things that mean a lot to mom and dad, they're getting it through lecture. They're not having heart-to-heart sit-down dinner talks anymore, or they're not, many of them are not going for walks or reserving a time on Saturday morning just for the two of them or the, you know, three of them to escape to a coffee shop and just visit. Mm-hmm. And there's less and less of that because there's less and less time. We blurred boundaries so much between work and home. People are working from home.
Yeah, that makes it tough. So as a parent, you know, we can kind of concretely go, okay, I need to make more time. But what do our kids need from us during that time?
Right. Our kids need a constant check-in. And I always say, start talking to your kids. Check in with your kids daily. A check-in is when you're not standing in the hall. You're not on your way to get something else. You're not looking at your phone. You've just scheduled a check-in. And a check-in is like our time, finally, at last. You put on your lounge pants. You put on an old sweatshirt. You can go up to their room or they can come down to yours. And it's our time. It's keeping our time sacred. And that's asking a lot because I'm a sex therapist and I also ask couples to keep that our time too, because I want mom and dad to stay in that marriage healthy and strong so they can parent these teens.
When we have these conversations, I always sit back and go, what specific questions should I be asking? And is there a line that I shouldn't be crossing as a parent that is respectful of their privacy, or is it game on? Let's talk about everything. What would you recommend?
You know, I recommend everything because I think you can respect privacy and still talk about everything. This whole idea that kids need privacy or parents want to be careful about checking their children's room. I say if you bought the house, if they live in the house, and they know the rules that you are the parent And if you have this rule that you are allowed to rummage through their room anytime and you find something, then you better talk about it. With my girls, I talk about everything. But it was easier for them because sex was not an off topic. Mm-hmm. And I think for many parents, sex is a taboo topic. Parents aren't comfortable about it. Parents want to pretend that their kids live in this, you know, Cinderella world, or I don't know what it's called. They never bring it up. And, you know, a child is not going to bring up something that they see you look embarrassed about. They're watching your face all the time. Kids tell me how their parents feel, and their parents will sit in the office and say, I never said that. And the child will say, yes, you did. You did. You didn't say it out loud, but I saw it. And then the mom or dad will look really sheepish, like, oh my gosh, this kid read me. Yeah, of course they read you. They've been watching you since you're the first person they watched as you used to feed them. And if you think you're fooling them, parents got to wake up about everything. And, you know, now when kids ask parents, did you do this? Did you have sex with, if your child's 14, I don't necessarily think that parents need to divulge all those details. In fact, I think it can hurt your child. And I would have a policy. I'm never going to tell you something about myself that I think will hurt you. But I did put both of my girls on a contract where it came to sex. We both signed it. And the contract was simply, if you decide you're going to have sex, you are going to check with me first. I'm not going to try and talk you out of it, but I do want to talk to you about the possible consequences and make sure you are going to be healthy and safe. My kids followed that. One, I know, did not have sex through high school. The other one was going to, but we talked about it, and I don't think she ever did.
Well, you talked earlier, Mary Jo, you said what we want to encourage our kids to do is to focus on the relationships. So yeah. Well, okay, we need to have time, and sex is one of the things we need to talk to them about. What else can we talk to them about or ask them about? How can we encourage them to stay focused on the friendship, the emotional, the relationship side of things?
Well, I think when you ask relationship-based questions, like when they say something, you say, how did that make you feel? Or they say something about their boyfriend or girlfriend, how do you think they felt? What is their feeling about their family? If your daughter or son says, I don't know, we don't talk about that, then they're not talking about those things. And how do you talk as a family? You know, it's not only what you say to your kids. When you talk to your child's other parents, how do you talk to them? Are you lecturing them? Are you talking to them at all? Is it just curt little things? Or do you say, wow, that must have made you feel bad? Are you modeling what a relationship looks like? I don't think there's a checklist necessarily of questions. If there's a toxic relationship or abuse going on in a relationship, usually you'll start seeing symptoms in your child because your child will start eating weird. They won't be sleeping. They'll be more anxious, more angry, more irritable, and they'll be sad. They may cry. If you have a close relationship with your child, they may come and tell you about it, but not all kids do. And I see a fair amount of that, especially during stressful times. Finals, the holidays, after a school shooting. And school shootings are one of those things that they present post-traumatic stress in some kids, not all kids. And if your kid is more on the empathic side, you can expect your child to have more problems with it later. It may come up during rites of passage, like when they think about where that child would be had they not gotten shot. The holidays are a real big time of grief for teens.
And so what about consent? You know, that's a big thing in the news, and especially—
That is a huge thing.
For our teens and for our college kids too.
Right. Well, you know, in the state of Texas, and I know every state is different, in the state of Texas, if there's any alcohol involved, there is no such thing as giving consent. So in other words, if your child, if there was, if both people said, yes, I'm ready to have sex, but there was any alcohol involved, that will be discounted. And I especially think we need to talk to our boys, because talking to our girls is one thing. Girls are usually the ones that will say yes, and then they'll rethink it and say, no, because very few girls will be honest or brave enough to say, I can't do this. I just said yes the first time because I was scared I would lose you. Nobody's going to say that. That's probably how they feel, but that's not what they're going to say. And then after the fact, after it's done, they may feel so guilty that they'll go back and say, I never said yes. And then there's all kinds of problems. And most of them are going to be placed in the guy's position then, because he will be the one defending, but you said yes.
Mm-hmm. So Mary Jo, for those of us with boys, how would you suggest that we talk to them about that?
I am very scared for boys right now, for many different reasons. But I would talk to my sons and say, listen, it is not a good idea to, in high school, I would just say, absolutely, you and I will have to talk and find another way to channel this sexual aggression, because I'm scared about it. I am so afraid about it. It could ruin his life. And in college, it could really ruin his life. And I would teach my son very early, you are not entitled to do anything. You are not entitled to touch her. You are not entitled to kiss her. You are not entitled to hold her hand, because boys have been raised with a sense of entitlement and duty. I think many, many men have even felt like if they weren't the aggressor sexually, they would be called names. They would be thought less manly. They would be teased, because what was wrong with you? Why didn't you take advantage of the situation? And when I talk to boys one-on-one, most boys say, listen, I don't want to do any of that stuff. I feel pushed by her. Like, so that she knows that she's pretty and I desire her, but he doesn't say it in those words all the time, but that she doesn't think that I'm gay or I have a problem that I'm a different sex. That's a real legitimate boy's concern. And they talk, and boys are, if they talk to their dads or their uncles, some dads are real good, some uncles are real good. But there's a lot of guys who go, well, you know, if you really like her, kiss her, you know, do this. And honestly, we've got to stop that whole rhetoric. Mm-hmm. And it's going to be difficult, because that if we teach boys that you're not entitled and you have to ask for everything, then girls are going to have to stop saying, well, I just want a confident man that takes charge. And maybe when you're 30, that is what you want, but not when you're in high school or college. You want a friendship, a relationship that is mutual, and you both respect each other and you respect the friendship. You won't do anything to harm each other. I think mm-hmm. that's where we need to get.
Which kind of brings me to the whole breakup thing. You know, it's what should we do as parents or avoid doing if we see our child in these situations or experiencing a breakup or, you know, not being friends first? How should we step in, or what should we avoid doing?
Well, I think just talking to the, you know, kids need help with consequences. Like, they don't understand them because that frontal cortex is not developed. So when a parent can come and not lecture, but rather gently say, you know, I know you love her or I know you love him, but this could backfire so badly. I mean, I can see the dynamics. I can see the dynamics from where I'm standing, and I'm asking you, please, to just stop and reassess. It doesn't mean you have to break up with them, but it does mean you have to get a little bit of the bigger picture. You need to step back a little bit. This is why they come into a therapist. Most of my work is just helping them see a little bit clearer of what the consequences could possibly be. Because when kids know consequences, they do better. Like, I did a Facebook Live with a lawyer, and we talked about consent. And when this lawyer was talking honestly about how this could screw up boys and girls' lives forever, especially boys, because they've been the real perpetrators in the court size here, it's just terrible. And these kids are young. I mean, then they have to get these, you know, they're labeled sexual predators, and my goodness, are they really sexual predators? What does that mean? And helping boys understand, is this what you want? Don't you think the relationship is more valuable? I tell my girls all the time, if you really love the person and you love and invest in the relationship, then you'll never do an action that will damage or threaten the relationship. So then they come back to, well, sex won't damage it. It's going to make it better. And I say, yes, sometimes. But there's a time for it. And high school is not the time for it, in my opinion, because you need to be totally emotionally mature to understand the possible consequences. Will it screw up where you want to go to college? Will it maybe produce a child that you're not ready to raise? How will she feel, or how will he feel? They tell you this, but how do they really feel about it? One of the hardest things I ever saw my daughter go through was a breakup with a boy she really loved. That child did not eat for 2 weeks. I mean, it is a real visceral thing. The heart really does secrete hormones like it's breaking. And I think when parents step in and say, listen, you've gotten through bad things before, I'm gonna go with you. We would put puzzles together. Some days she would talk, some days she wouldn't. We went for walks. I was ever present in her life. And so was her dad, but more in a background. Mm-hmm. And she told me now she's so grateful. I never said anything bad about her ex. I said, you were both young, Serena. And her name is Serena. I said, you were both very young, and love looks different when, depending on the stage you're at, you're in high school, and she was a senior in high school. It was devastating. I think when kids understand that this is a powerful, their relationships are very powerful that they're forming, and it's hurtful when it breaks up.
And I love how you gave us how to be present when that happens, and just to highlight the fact that we don't need to say anything. We don't need to fix it. All we really need to do is just be there and take the cues from them as to what from us.
I asked boys specifically what their parents did that made them feel the most comforted when they were upset. And notoriously, it was their mom. And she would rub the back of their neck, like put her hand on the back of their neck, or would put her hand like on the back of their hair or their shoulder. And she would quietly say, I am here. And we have been through bad things before. Boys really got that. And they felt such a deep sense that they had someone walking with them. Because it's nice if you have a deep faith. But God isn't here. He comes through parents. And so sometimes parents have to align themselves with what does my God tell me, or what does my value, how can I show presence? I think parents talk too much sometimes. They just need to touch those kids.
Mm-hmm. And to respect their feelings. You've talked about how this is actually a physical process as well as the emotional one. And as adults, I think oftentimes it can be easy to push it off and go, oh, it's just a high school relationship. Oh, it's puppy love. Oh, we've been living together for 2 weeks. What I hear you saying, none of that matters.
That's right. Well, for one thing, it makes your child feel like you don't care. And that then it might make them feel guilty because am I being too big of a baby? But actually what you should say is, I am so proud of you that I helped raise someone so empathic and capable of loving that you can love someone and it will really hurt. That is such a healthy sign. Every parent should embrace that. In fact, I think every crisis is an opportunity for parents to get closer to their kids. I've never found one that wasn't. It's just that a lot of parents are so afraid that the way they deal with their own fear, rather than just telling their child, I'm afraid, they'll pass it off. They'll just project, oh, get over it, or you'll get through this. A school shooting, well, we're lucky it wasn't you. I mean, they'll just say these callous things because they're so afraid to go there. But their child, when they're in that space, they can't see that vulnerable part of their parent. So they just say, he doesn't care, or she doesn't care. And that's the worst thing you can do to your teen. If a teen feels like their parents don't care, now that will mess them up.
Yeah. And going, you know, back to the beginning, when you said, it's all about relationships. It's also about the relationships that we have with our kids.
Yes. That's such a good point. It's how your kids are watching you all the time. They want to see how you relate to them. They want to see how you relate to your partner. They want to see how you relate to your friends. That's how they learn. They don't care really what you say. That's why touch is so powerful, because when you touch, you needn't say anything. It's the way you touch. Your child, in their brain, in their deepest crevice, is wired your touch, because you were the first person that touched that child when they were delivered to you. And so when your touch carries such an impact compared to anyone else's. When I was a nurse before I was a psychologist, in the ICU, when a parent touches a child who's been in an accident, it has a profound effect on that child's vital signs. Nobody else can do that. A nurse can touch them. A girlfriend can touch them. They don't resonate with anyone as strongly as they do their parents. And that's because you guys held them since they existed. And so if you just go back to that, how can I be a force of healing? What can I do when your child's having a bad day? How can I help you heal? And you could ask that. But sometimes kids will just not want to hear that, or they've never heard that. Just touch the back of their neck and just tell them, I'm here. I wish I could take the pain away, but I can't.
So the answers are simple, but they're not easy, because as parents, we do want to fix it. And I appreciate
I appreciate that
you're keeping us focused on that piece of just being there for them. So I just want to pop back and hit on a few of the key things that you've told us today. And so essentially, what we've heard is that our teens are actually taking less risk sexually. There are less teenage pregnancies and that type of thing, but there's more sexting, more pornography. The girls are being much more aggressive, and in total, our kids don't understand the permanency of these pictures and things that they do, but a lot of their behavior seems to come from a desperation that they're feeling to be accepted, to have relationships, to have friends. And so we can, as parents, one of the things we can do is remember that we are still a powerful force in our teenage life. That we are the 90th percentile when it looks, when they look at influencers in a team's life, which was surprising to me. So we can be there with them. And you told us, you know, we need to make time for them, regular check-in time. And during those times, be open and have conversations about everything under the sun. And from a dating standpoint, this, one of the important conversations we need to have is focus on the relationship, build that, be part of that. We also need to have conversations about consent, and we need to very much protect our boys there, but we also need to be talking to our girls about being responsible, about giving consent, not giving consent, being very clear about that. And I loved this, you know, the way you talked about, yes, it happens to be the law in Texas, but that idea for a conversation is that people can't give consent when there's alcohol involved. So even just helping our kids draw that line and say, hey, if there's any alcohol, or in I live in Michigan and they just legalized marijuana, which granted technically isn't for teens, but you know, if there's any alcohol, if there are any drugs involved, there can be no consent. So even if you don't agree with me on these other things, at least make that role for yourself. And then just be there for our kids and use that touch and use the power of just saying, I am here for you. I really love that. Mary Jo, for people who are enjoying this conversation and want more from you, where can they find you?
Well, my website is maryjorapini.com, and that's my name. I also am big on Twitter, at Mary Jo Rapini. I have a YouTube, and it's called Reaction Reset. It's doing very well. I have homework they can download. Parents can do it. It's more couple-based or individual. College kids are loving it. I think they feel like they're going to therapy, or they're kind of working on it. And then they comment on the homework via they subscribe to my YouTube. So I constantly have contact with those followers, and I really like that. Like, I have 6 right now that just popped up that I'm going to attend to after I'm done here. So it's not in lieu of therapy, but it certainly helps if you don't have the time or money to go to therapy. And it's a little bit removed. I'm not there looking at them, and so I think it makes it a little bit easier for them to face some of their fears and personal struggles. The most important relationship you'll ever have in your life is the one you have with yourself. So it's very important that parents, too, talk to kids about, at the end of the day, you know, how do you feel about that? What did you learn? And to embrace mistakes as learning. They're just learning steps. I mean, there is a consequence. When you screw up, there is a consequence, but also never getting so wrapped up in a mistake that you can't see this was a learning step and I will do better next time.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you so much for joining us today, Mary Jo. I know that I just appreciate everything that you're talking about and the fact that you have these different places that our listeners can get more from you and chat with you. And just want to thank all of our listeners for being here with us today and being part of the Mighty Parenting community. If you're a first-time listener, welcome. We are so excited you're here. I want to invite you to go to mightyparenting.com and see all the support we have for you. And if you are a long-time listener, you know, we just want to encourage you, because you are a mighty parent and we all need some help walking through this journey of raising our teens and 20-somethings. This is Judy Davis and Sandy Fowler saying see you next week.